This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and actually, this is going to be like a fairly normal, average podcast because I'm going home. I think I was probably set up to help get the video set up tonight, but I had told the tech team that this Thursday night setting things up just does not work with small group leadership, and they understood there was no problem there whatsoever. So I'm just heading straight home. I'm sure there'll be a few little things that I can do to assist my beloved, and then small group starts at 6:30 and it's 4:45 now. So I think we're on track and everything's going to be fine. It'll be good to see our group again. We missed them for Thanksgiving, and so it's nice to get together. We have a couple I know who are going to be missing. I think she has is having some physical difficulties, but she's slowly getting recovered from that, so that's good. And I found out today that I may have extra responsibilities because one of our music ministers apparently has the COVID now, so just, and he's already had it once, but it was last year, and your immunity wanes, and I'm sure it was the original version. This is probably Delta, since Omicron hasn't spread too much now. So we'll see. It's just so fascinating. So very, very fascinating. As I just keep saying, I really hope that somebody does a real live documentary on this stuff, because this is just, man, there is so much religious fervor, and frankly, there is cause for concern, because whenever you develop an overarching narrative of this group of people is the great unwashed that's causing all the suffering in the world, that only goes one place. It has always, ever, only gone one place. And that is to destruction and death and torture and horror. Because as soon as you define this group as the great unwashed that are causing all of the trouble in the world, then obviously there's one solution, and that is to get rid of them. And this is something that has repeated itself over and over through history, and it will continue to repeat itself. As soon as you dehumanize a group of people, the next thing that comes is horror and destruction and murder and torture and violent opposition. So, bless our political leaders' hearts, this business of vilifying those who are unvaccinated is not a good plan. It's not a good plan. And it's not going to get them vaccinated, because we are not children. And wagging fingers and say, you better get this done. It's like when Biden was talking about the unvaccinated. He says, and we've been patient, but it's just time to, really? Thank you for being patient. That is not going to get it. It's not going to get it. Especially when there's been such confusion in the messaging. So it's really fascinating to watch. So we'll see how all that goes. The writing is going to be fine. I'm a little bit behind where I'm supposed to be at this point, but I'm doing my final read-through. Had to build the night before last, and so I didn't do any writing on Tuesday night. Because by the time I got home, I had dinner with a friend. By the time I got home, I was running a little late. By the time I did my billing, then I was late. And then so I just worked on costume a little bit and then went to bed. Got some writing done last night, so got another chapter knocked out. Gonna need to, you know, put on the push this weekend. Try to get some stuff read through, but it's going fine. The book is fine. It accomplishes the things that I was interested in accomplishing with this book, and the beta readers seem to enjoy it, so ta-da! I have some beta readers who, you know, make a lot of comments as they go, which is cool because it lets me see their reactions kind of in real time. And so after I get this all put together, oh, hold on, this is my beloved. One moment. Okay, I'm back. That was my beloved. Apparently, there's enough people that are going to be out for the small groups thing that, you know, we're going to be on a skeletal crew, but that's okay. We'll get together. We'll talk about Jesus. It'll be a good day. And apparently, not only our music minister had it, but even we have at least one other staff member that has it as well. So, you know, that's that Delta variant. It's tricky, and it may be Omicron. So who knows? We'll see. Anyways, so all is well there. Writing is going fine. The goal with the writing is simply to have book 15 read through and all the files ginned and uploaded to the server sometime around December 15th, which of course would be about Wednesday of next week. It's at this point, I would guess it's going to float into next weekend, so I would hope to have it wrapped up by whatever it's going to be, the 17th in there, or that Friday, or that weekend, 17th, 18th, 19th. If I can have it wrapped up 17th, 18th, 19th, I'm good. Because then, you know, I can coast into the next week. I'll probably hop back on and start doing my read-through. Well, yeah, I'd probably hop back on and start doing my read-through for book 16 at that point. But yeah, so, and then get to write book 16. Book 16 is the last book in the second set of 8, which means that once I get book 16 done, I will officially be in the last set of 8, which is fun, which I have no idea. I know where we're going. And I know what happens, and I know it's called the Nightmare Opus, which means that we're going to start pulling out all the stops, and things are going to get ugly. But, you know, as to exactly what happens at each spot, I have no idea. And part of this exercise is living in that uncertainty. I mean, it's really... that part of it's really, really interesting. I had a conversation, I think it was this last week, with a friend who's a beta reader, and he had made some comments in his input that he had sent back that I thought, oh, I don't think you quite know how I do these books. Because he was thinking that I had compromised some of my characters strictly because it would be entertaining for my readers. And, you know, so that was one of the things that we talked about. We talked about he had had an observation about one of the characters thinking that I would have an immediate answer for him. And I said, you know, this is the way I think it works now. And he kind of looked at me. I said, yeah, this is the framework that I work on, but I can't tell you that I know the details. So I stay within this framework, but those small minor details is the, I don't know. But we'll get it figured out as we go. And I admitted to him that, like on book 15, I said, look, I knew that this major plot development was going to happen in this book. And I knew that I wanted to start it off with some sort of a kind of a Louis the 15th, Louis the 14th, whatever it is. You know, the palace at Versailles, the royal court with all its stodgy policies and procedures and protocols. I knew that's what I wanted. I knew I wanted a really old king who eats his morning snack as everybody watches with bated breath until he holds up his spoon triumphantly and says, "I had pudding!" And then everybody applauds, and big applause and great proclamations about how great our king is. I knew that was going to be the first scene, but that was it. You know, and I just get started and this thing unfolds as I'm writing it. So I kind of consider myself the first beta reader because I'm the one that's like, oh, that's happening in this book. Oh, okay, that's happening in this book. Fine. But that process of having nothing and then seeing it come into being, that's really a valuable process. I mean, that's really a very, very cool process to experience over and over and over again. And what's also very cool is that as I'm doing something like a book 15 or a book 16, I can look back then and into the previous 7 or 8 books, and I can see how there were themes that were developing in those 7 or 8 books that then kind of wind back around and end up, end up being something that is a thematic track and a culmination of something that I really wasn't expecting to be a culmination or a thematic track. It was just what I felt like I needed to write at the moment. But then over the course of those 7 books, it developed into something. And so all that stuff is really fascinating to watch. And for me, at least, it has generated more of an attitude of, you know what? It'll all work out. It'll all work out. Just keep puttering along. And that is the same attitude that has developed in me when it comes to the costumes. You know, I do what I feel like I need to get done on the costumes each evening, and then it'll all work out. You know, when I get things and they aren't quite to the specifications that I want, it's like, well, okay, let's figure out how this gets worked out. So it's really, it's quite interesting. And there are hints and there are unusual things that happen along the way. And I think I mentioned all of this last week. I'm pretty sure we talked about it last week. I think I did. We talked about Be an Angel Day last week. Pretty sure. While I'm driving here, let me just look this up real quick. Because I'm pretty sure we talked about this last week, because I have decided that one of the things I need to do is that I need to testify more to the playfulness, to the goodness and to the playfulness of God. Which I was out with a friend this week, and when I said the playfulness of God, he just kind of looked at me and he said, okay, what's that? Because I've never experienced that. And, that's... Oh, maybe I didn't. No, I think I talked about this. Yes, I did. I talked about it 2 weeks ago. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I had another one of those happen this last week, and it wasn't a big one. It was just I had gotten some things in for another holiday coming up, because I'm only going to do like 3 new holidays. I think I'm only going to do 3 new ones. And I had gotten in a mask, and I tried it on, and it was hysterical. It just was hysterical. And I showed my wife, and she was just looking at me going, it is so weird to hear your voice coming out of that mask. But the mask was really kind of expensive, and so I was like, I don't think it really justifies this for the holiday I was going to use it for. And so I sent it back and got a refund on it. But in conjunction with that, I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I had gone through and lined out all the days to know where I was on days as far as holidays. And there was one holiday that, as I came across it, I kind of looked at it and went, okay, it's okay. And actually, now that I think about it, I have two or three more like that, but they're better than this one. So this particular one, I was just like, it's all right. You know, there was that same kind of that I had last year with King Kamehameha Day. And so I started looking around because of the mask I had purchased. Because it looked like a robot face, I started looking around, and sure enough, there's a holiday. Love Your Robot Day. Oh, great, great. It's like the end of February. Love Your Robot Day. Oh, this is the end of the world as we know it. And so that's kind of a funny bit, you know. The end of civilization as we know it. And if it, the bit, part of the bit is, if this ever catches on, you know, forget it. The birth rate's just going to crater. Because there are people working on female companionship robots right now, and I'm sure someone is also working on male companionship robots. And, you know, if you just have a robot that all day is going, I love you, I'll do anything you want, it's like, oh man, no, no, this is not good. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. But that was, again, one of those situations that the particular holiday I was celebrating in that time frame was something that was okay, but it wasn't great. And I think this will be a lot funnier and great and et cetera, et cetera. So I've swapped it out.
I'm making plans for that.
And we move forward. So costumes are fine. Still working on the New Year's costume. And that's going fine. I've been working on one particular piece of it now for a week, which is really long, but it's one of the more complicated pieces. And then I have one more complicated piece. And then I have a third complicated piece, but I'm going to hold that till the end in case I run out of time. And then the rest of it, I think I can get pushed together pretty quickly. So, and I am on the countdown because this is, it's not this week, but it's what, one... because tomorrow's the third. One, two, three, four. I got 4 weeks, which is plenty of time. Plenty of time to get it done. Anyways, so this week I had come across a rehearsal of a section of Thomas Sowell's book. I had never heard of this book, but I had come across this rehearsal, and there was information in there that was really, really fascinating. I assume this information was such that it was attempting to dispute or to dispel some kind of insistence that Africa had been somehow treated unfairly, because that's what it feels like. But there was just a lot of really interesting information that I did not know about. And so, you know, that was fun. It was fun to hear this and realize, wow, it really is different. And basically, it comes down to pure geography. Because Africa has not had the kind of economic development that European nations have had, that China has had. And, you know, it brings up the question, why? And I'm sure there are people on both sides of whatever argument they're trying to make that'll come up with all kinds of human reasons why Africa has not enjoyed the same type of economic development as something like a Europe or America or Canada or China or I'm getting my mail, one moment. But I mean, this is just a pretty interesting set of developments, you know, when you actually just take a look at it and say, oh, well, I guess so. So that was kind of the thrust of this section out of this book that apparently Thomas Sowell had written. And there were just a lot of little stuff. I'm not going to go through all of it because I am home and I have to go out, my beloved. But there is some really interesting things. Like, it started up by saying that one of the interesting things about Africa is it actually has that despite being larger than the continent of Europe, it actually has a coastline that's shorter. They said, even though Africa is second only to Asia in size, this anomaly reflects Africa's lack of numerous coastal indentations that provide places where ships might dock safely. And so Thomas Sowell goes on in this book, apparently, to describe a whole bunch of these things that when you compare Africa to other continents, there are some fairly striking differences. And so since its coastline does not have, you know, these openings, what it meant was that ships couldn't dock sheltered from storms. And so the early maritime nations that had this, it was much easier to develop merchant trade on the seas. In addition to that, he was also talking about the shallowness of the coastal waters for Africa. I mean, it was talking a lot about the inland rivers, how the inland rivers kind of have different characteristics that they are not nearly as navigable as a bunch of the other continents are. And so it's harder to get inland. I mean, here we're talking about a whole bunch of different things about how that the rivers themselves, as they're traversing through, the drop of the land is much steeper than some of the other continents, which means you're having to deal with rapids. It's very hard to get back up. And they were even talking about, let's see if I can find it. It was really fascinating. They were saying the places that really did thrive in Africa were places like where the Nile dumps out, and, you know, places in northern Africa where there was a little bit better sheltering from storms and those kind of things. But there was one spot where they were talking about one of these major rivers, but how it fluctuates so much through the year that there's only certain times when you can get the big ships in there. And it's not very long. It's like 2 months. And so what happens is when the river starts rising in those 2 months, the first things that are going in are the smaller canoes to do their trade there. And then eventually when it gets risen up to a point where they can take the big ships in, they take the big ships in, but then they got to get their job done and then get out. Because when the water starts dropping, if they don't get out in time, their ship can be stranded for like 10 months, which is not good. That's not... And they've really got to be careful how they time it, because if you go too soon, then you lose the opportunity of whatever stuff you were collecting to be able to resell it. And if you wait too long, then you're stuck. You know, just a lot of these really, really interesting things. So they were talking about the Niger River. The heart of a great river system in West Africa, draining an area nearly twice the size of Texas, the Niger, is not navigable everywhere by large vessels, and is not navigable at all in some places because of rapids and the height. And at the height of the rainy season, the Niger may become a 20-mile-wide moving lake, but during the dry season, the average depth of the Niger can fall in places to below 4 meters, Despite its serious limitations, the Niger compares favorably with other African rivers with even more serious limitations. The Niger has been characterized as the easiest to navigate in all of tropical Africa. So it's really interesting how, you know, these geographical limitations, of course, would affect commerce and trade and the types of trade and how you ship goods in and out and what goods are worth producing. Because, I mean, if you have a difficult time shipping goods in and out, then if you are supplying goods to external customers, probably what you're looking to do is you're looking to make as much profit as you can because there is this additional cost associated by getting stuff from one place to another. And Thomas Sowell had noted in this that the big trade during the early parts of Africa really centered on the external trade, if I got this right, really centered on gold, which is, of course, you know, there's a lot of upcharge there. Ivory, which, of course, is upcharged, and slavery. That there were economic drivers in Africa to push the African tribes towards that, because potentially some of the reason for that may be because it's just geography. Which, you know, if we apply our rubric that every inequity in the world must be attributable in some way to racism, then, you know, the conclusion is that you have to say, well, apparently geography is racist as well. And maybe God is racist because when he made the world, he didn't make it, you know, give everybody an even chance. So I don't know where all that goes, but I don't need to prove anything one way or another. It was just, I just found it fascinating. I had no idea. The entire, let's see if I wrote down, it's a YouTube video. The entire video is called Facts About Africa's Geography Never Taught in Schools, Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell does not narrate it. It's just somebody took a chunk out of his book, out of one of his books. So that was pretty interesting. But anyways, I am home. I need to go in. Okay. Help my beloved. Sorry. Help my beloved get ready for small groups here. And have a great weekend. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.